Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I'm super excited for today's conversation. It's been long in the making. We've been discussing having this episode for a very long time, and it's finally happening. Yay! So I'd like to welcome Lindsay Roth, who is an organizer with Project Safe. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
So yeah, I've been super excited to have you on and talk today. What is Project Safe?
Project Safe is a all-volunteer grassroots harm reduction organization that provides direct services to women surviving street economies and also advocates for their empowerment.
So when you use the term street economies, you are referring to?
All sorts of hustles, but mainly sex work and the drug trade, where women do participate in various ways that, you know, are not necessarily like co-occurring, though they can be, but they're criminalized very similarly.
That's interesting.
All sorts of creative stuff people do for money.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the organization reaches out. The people that I've known tended to be sexuality educators and tended to do like the work out on the street, just like approaching anybody that they saw and was like, anybody need condoms? And then that kind of stuff. So that was like my first introduction to Project Safe. Is that still a thing?
That is still very much a thing. Mm-hmm. Though our work has changed a bit. You know, we started our work in the Kensington area 10 years ago now, but I don't know if, you know, we have a lot of theories. I think as it's becoming gentrified, as police are trying to crack down on the quote-unquote open-air drug markets and sex trade, there's definitely more police activity where there used to be a pretty open stroll and reliable place to engage in sex work. So the women we're trying to reach are moving to different places, so we still do outreach, but a lot of what we do now are deliveries. So we have a bunch of safer sex supplies, harm reduction supplies, a bad date sheet, which I'll talk about, and other information that we'll just drop off to wherever folks say they need it. And we go to all sorts of interesting places.
So the term harm reduction comes from the school of thought that there's many different ways to approach like public health issues. What does that mean in practical purposes?
I mean, it means the way we explain it is we all do things that might not be the best thing for us, or even the best thing for our communities or our families, but there's ways that we can mitigate harm. And we do this all the time already, on sort of interpersonal levels, but also sort of like as a community or society. For example, bike riding is kind of dangerous. So we wear helmets. But also as a society, we've decided that we want to keep bike riders alive. So we put in bike lanes. And we, you know, and that's exactly the same thing when it comes to people who are trading sex for money or whatever. But sort of barriers for us is that as a society, we still haven't decided that these people's lives are worth saving. Mm. So what we do is we work really one-on-one or with smaller communities of sex workers to see what sex workers can do to keep each other safe, because there's not laws protecting people who want to hurt sex workers, and there's a lot of ways that institutionally they are harmed.
Let's go right back to that point about how there's sort of like this ambivalence about whether we care about all lives, right? Mm-hmm. So what's that about?
I've been thinking about that. I mean, I think about that all the time. And, you know, actually, I was... Have you read the news about Charlie Sheen today?
Yes.
And like the first, it took 3 minutes into his interview for him or Matt Lauer to blame prostitutes for, you know, his diagnosis, or like his health condition. Like, he's a grown ass man. You know, there's a lot of ways people get sick, and it's just amazing. And
that is a fascinating, like, mental gymnastics. Like, the immediate thought is like, someone else, other, must have brought this onto this nice white rich man, right? Like,
yeah,
because nice white rich men don't just have diseases, and he certainly wouldn't share it with anyone else, right? Like, he didn't put anybody else at risk. He probably didn't put any sex workers at risk because,
right,
he's exactly a nice white rich man,
and that's how power works in this society.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, he was able to pay people off. Like, that doesn't mean there's a power dynamic going on there.
He was apparently extorted for all this money to like keep this undercover, but like,
yeah,
someone
male tears.
Yeah, someone tweeted yesterday like, do we know that he has informed all of his partners before he goes on TV and tells all of us?
Mm-hmm.
Like, this might be a question. And he, you know, he's claiming that he didn't put anybody at risk and that he was upfront with everybody and blah, blah, blah. And I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Brie Olson, who was one of his goddesses and who is a sex worker, or was, has recent did an interview today and said she was very much not informed and put at risk. So I don't know. I think it's really interesting how he is able to leverage his power in society to get up in front of, you know, to be manipulative. I mean, we'll never know what happens, but it's just amazing that he can create this story, you know, based on this mythology about sex workers and people who trade sex, that they are vectors of diseases, and the public is buying it for the most part. And this happens all the time. And it's, I think we're kind of up against these two narratives that I know you've discussed on the show, where it's, you know, like, sex workers are, yeah, they're a threat to society in a lot of ways. And I think what we deal with now is people want to make Philly great and clean up the neighborhood, and sex workers are seen as a bad part of the neighborhood instead of people there working and doing their job that is sometimes forced into the streets, but they probably don't want to be doing that job there.
I mean, it's just like, to me, that's nothing but classism, right? Because mm-hmm. all I see all day in Center City is people walking around working, you know, like, dressed to go to a place where they're going to make a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all need to have money so that we could have, like, shelter, you know, and food and, you know, basic needs. But that job is somehow more moral.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay that I'm going to go to this, like, you know, like, this bank or whatever.
I'm going to go, like, screw a bunch of people out of their money.
Yeah.
Sell these people these subprime mortgages.
Yeah.
But, like, right, what we're doing is wrong.
But that's a morally pure thing, because
yeah.
all that does is take away people's livelihoods and their retirements and stuff.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, to give someone an orgasm, well, that's not okay.
Yeah, exactly.
That's an immoral job. Because no, that's a fucking actual honest job. That's a, like, this is the service you're gonna get, and this is the amount of money you're gonna fucking pay. And then like one of the only true moral jobs where you know what you're gonna get.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fucking fascinating to me. And like, this is also referred to, obviously, it's like the oldest profession, right? And yet we still have this, like, we haven't gotten over it.
Yeah, we're still trying to get rid of it. And it's amazing that people think, you know, they can push it out of specific neighborhoods, and like, certain neighborhoods do deserve it and certain neighborhoods don't. Like, and again, this is like the more visible street-based sex work, even though, like, down the block there's Delilah's advertising, like, a different form of sex work,
yeah.
That just is more corporate and acceptable. And then it's, you know, I've been working with Safe for 8 years. And like, yeah, for the longest time, our problem was just like, violent cops and violent clients. But now it's like this I mean, they've always been around, but this group of feminists who also are just as insulting and think we're too stupid to make decisions for ourselves and we need to be rescued from ourselves. And that's just as problematic.
So that would be like the sex negative feminists who think that like women can't possibly be choosing to go into sex work, take away like the agency to make those decisions, that sort of thing. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that is called like the rescue industry, where it's even people who consider themselves feminists, consider themselves progressive, consider themselves sex positive. But they, for some reason, it does come down to class, where I think they think that narrative stops at sex workers, or when sex is sold for money or traded, it's cheapening, and it's just like, you know, they still want their vision of, I don't know, like a partnered, married life that like not everyone's down with, and yeah, and their husbands are keeping fueling this industry anyway. So
let's talk about who. All right, who are the clients? Because you mentioned violent ones, but like, is that a common? That's two different questions, actually. So, how common is violence from cops and from clients? And then, who are the clients? Those are two pretty big questions.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because it's hard to tell who the clients are. I think most clients are non-violent clients. They want an orgasm and then they want to move on with their day and they want discretion. And that's why, you know, there's a profession that serves that need. For us, especially when it comes to street-based work, like there's so many other risk factors that go into it. And what I think is introduced is someone who they're called clients, but I'm not sure if they're there for sexual services. I think there's also a group of, you know, I think almost 100% men who know that there's also this sort of group of women who are, you know, they're willing to like go with a stranger in a car or follow a stranger to the other place. Because of the increased police presence, they don't have time to screen them. There's ways I'll talk about how like police have really taken away the few tools we had to keep ourselves safe. So I think there's just predators out there who really sort of monopolize on the subjugated status that sex workers have in society. And so it's, I don't know.
So they're just looking to be violent or somehow exploitive, and this is just a vulnerable population.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's also what distinguishes other forms of sex work from outdoor sex work. You know, if you're working even off of Backpage, which still is incredibly risky and has its own predators, you still can like screen someone or at least like meet them in front of your hotel door and like, you know, check their ID or do whatever little thing you can do to try and get some sort of power in the situation. But if you're just meeting someone and jumping in their car because you're too afraid to get arrested and going to the next location, there's a lot of men who know that they have so much more power than you do.
And you said that this is predominantly men, but are clients in general, like how common are female clients?
And we also, I should say that the sort of demographics of who we work with, just kind of sort of based on that area, like sex work is a very like racialized and gendered industry. So it's mostly cisgendered women. But there's some men hustling out there. They seem to serve male clients too. And I think that population, I mean, I've never heard of a female client. Sometimes people might go with a partner, a male partner. And I know in other forms of sex work, there's certainly female consumers, but we're doing our work, not so much.
Mm-hmm. And then you were talking earlier about the harm reduction model and going out and distributing various things that people might need. How do you go about assessing like what is useful to deliver? Like what are things that people need?
I mean, we try and do that as much as possible. I mean, we aren't like a really formalized nonprofit, or we aren't nonprofit at all. We're just like this collective of chicks helping other chicks. But when we can, we try and do like a little focus group and get people together and see what we're doing well, what we aren't doing well. And then even during outreach, you know, we have some people are just like grabbing stuff and going, but other times we have a chance to chat and talk, and people say that, like, yeah, like tampons are the most requested thing we need. Oh. And then we put a call out, and actually every year now the Temple Feminist Majority Organization does like a huge tampon drive. They just like collected like 3,000 tampons for us or something insane.
That's so huge. I was reading about what it's like to be like homeless and having to deal with like menstruation, and how rarely people donate that to homeless shelters.
Yeah, and I think the women we work with, too, are not in homeless shelters.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also where a lot of services are given out. In the state of Pennsylvania, if you have a prostitution conviction, you used to not be able to go into a domestic violence shelter. I think that's still the case. And there's a lot of ways that... I know, that women...
Counterintuitive.
...who are doing sex work and women who are using drugs are really marginalized from these services. So... being street-based is the smart thing to do. But yeah, then they get cut off from these venues that we say, like, oh, why don't you just go there and get this thing you need? And they literally can't. So,
how did you get involved with Project Safe?
It's a funny story that I told earlier. I used to staff at the Wooden Shoe, and there was like a flyer about providing health services to working women. And I was all about like healthcare and workers' rights and didn't really get the euphemism there. But it still is about healthcare and workers' rights. And I started just volunteering with SAFE, I guess it was 8 years ago now. And then at the time I was also dancing at a strip club and teaching, and was eventually asked to leave my job when a bunch of fellow male teachers came into my workplace.
Oh,
and like what I was doing was wrong.
But what they were doing was fine.
But what they were doing was fine. I never really saw sort of my experiences, you know, as a middle class woman, you know, just like dancing on the weekends to pay off school, very similar to someone doing street-based sex work. But I've started to see the connections of just stigma and criminalization and marginalization, and see these things as all very connected. So
I also very much enjoy the line of reasoning that you can't be a teacher because you're doing a thing that kids literally can't go to. Like, there's an actual person at the door
Make
sure that kids won't go there. That's their entire job. Like, what?
Yeah, like Varsity Blues isn't a real story, folks. I don't know. People always brought that up.
And also just this notion that, like, okay, so this work is bad. People shouldn't do this work, right? So to solve that, let's make it impossible for for anyone to have another kind of legitimate job, right?
Like, yeah.
And like every couple months I read about like some porn star or something, like, and somebody who is watching their porn like then freaks out about the fact that they're like a teacher or whatever, and like you're literally making it possible for them to do anything but sex work.
Yeah, I just saw something in Canada where a woman, they found some like porn from like the 60s that she was in, or like these like erotic photos. And I'm just like, when will it stop?
No, it's like, it's just like, it's this like slut shaming scavenger hunt. It's like, look, I found one.
Yeah.
I'm looking.
Got one. It really is. And that's actually how SAFE started, where we grew out of, you know, the legal syringe exchange, where a lot of women who were, you know, using drugs but also doing trading sex felt really, really like put on the spot whenever they would go access services, and people knew what they were doing and they had no privacy. So we figured something more discreet was the best way to reach that community. And that's now like a model worldwide for reaching sex workers that we also, I think, the founders recognize.
So do you get to spend a lot of time like hearing about people's stories and like what their lives are like now, what their lives were like before? Like, do you get to get to know a lot of people doing this?
Yeah, I think it's really great connecting with there's a very blurry line between our like participants or the people we're trying to reach out to and our volunteers. And some people move between those two things, and everyone sort of has a reason for getting involved in this work, which is always really interesting. And also the act of, walking up and down the street at night and asking people if they want condoms. Some of them know what we're doing there. A lot of people feel really off guard, and it is like a very invasive question. But then they really come back and tell you a lot about their sex life, which is really interesting to hear. So
I'm dying to hear stuff.
I mean, I don't do outreach so much anymore, but I mean, I even went out and started doing outreach with my own sort of ideas of what someone who's trading sex will look like. Not everyone looks like Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman. You know, there's like a whole variety of like ages and genders and bodies. And I remember like my first outreach shift. This is years ago now. Like, there was a woman who looked to be in her 70s, and I just, like, got nervous, and I wasn't sure. And then she told me, like, all about her wonderful sex life as a 70-year-old woman, and I gave her tons of condoms because she needed them. So, yeah.
All right. So there's a diversity, but what do folks have in common? Like, what brings everybody to a place where you come to interact with them?
Between the like folks we're reaching out to with SAFE and also the like crazy volunteers who decide to, you know, walk around town with a bunch of condoms. I think everyone sees a lot of the stuff in society as bullshit. You know, we were started to respond to the HIV epidemic, where we're just like, oh, this stuff that's like illegal works, but we're going to do it anyway. And I think we've kind of continued in that same vein. So that draws a lot of our volunteers and participants together, where we're just like, so you don't like people because of this job they have? That's stupid. Like, let's just meet people where they're at and give them what they need.
So we are, at this point, we're going to introduce a new person to the conversation. I'm very excited to introduce to you Ilsa. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for joining us. So you are a community educator, and you're also involved in Project SAFE?
Yes.
Okay. So what got you involved in Project SAFE?
Well, basically what got me involved was I was one of those women out there that was actually, you know, prostituting in Kensington and doing the whole drug bit and actually, you know, trying to get the help and not seeing, not actually being able to get any help, you know, until I was actually came across women from Project SAFE that if it wasn't for them, you know, I wouldn't have got the condoms, I wouldn't have got the syringes that I needed. Therefore, I might have picked up a syringe in the street and used it and got HIV or got Hep C or got what I could have gotten from that. And not just that, but in the process of meeting these ladies, like, they also educated me a lot, you know, as to, you know, what disease you can catch, what you can't. And I got really interested in that, you know, and from that I was able to, you know, get off the app and you know, steer myself towards a positive way of living, you know, and that initially is what allowed me, you know, I wanted to just help, you know. I wanted to give the help that was given to me, definitely.
I just want to check on levels. Do we need...
It's okay if you can lean in a little more.
Sure.
Yeah. I just want to make sure we hear you.
Sure.
So Ilsa, you mentioned like that you were taught stuff. Like when you were out on the street, like what did you not already know? Like what was new information for you that like Project SAFE introduced you to?
Okay, well, the first thing I got introduced to with Project SAFE was I had no idea there was something called a bad date sheet.
Okay.
You know, and I've been in so many situations with bad dates, you know, to the point where I've been hospitalized. So that was very helpful for me, and especially helpful in giving information to the other girls that were out there. You know, because that way I knew who to look out for, you know, like if I seen this car that, you know, was this color, I was already aware, you know, cautious. You know, certain guys that look certain ways, because that's what the bad day sheet is for. You know, that definitely helped me a lot.
So a bad day sheet is to identify
just
clients
identify
who...
basically clients who just did something they weren't supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, initially according to whatever girl's out there, according to her standards, it was a bad date.
Okay.
You know, basically, and she therefore, you know, tells the girls from Project SAFE, and you know, of course, with their permission, you know, put it on the sheet. And you give them out to the ladies, and ladies, you know, read them. And we definitely, you know, I read them definitely. I know the girls that, you know, I knew out there read them, and they were aware, you know, more aware, and they spread the news that way. You know, that way they knew how to be cautious and who to be cautious for.
So it's kind of like, not to make light of it, but it's kind of like a Yelp of like people to look out for. Like,
yeah, pretty much
just to save other people from having to learn the hard way.
Exactly.
and
exactly. Although it didn't, you know, it didn't save everybody. You know what I mean? But it's helpful. It was for me, and it's still to now very helpful.
So what's mm-hmm. I mean? So what's that look like? Or is it like that? There are guys that are going around and they're like sticking to the same neighborhood, and they find out, okay, I can't stick to this neighborhood anymore. Like in. Like, how often are people preying on the same areas that it was useful? Like, how, like, was this sort of operates on the assumption that somebody does bad stuff regularly or multiple times? And
it varies. Okay. You know, there's bad dates on that sheet where, you know, it's just happened once. Then you have your repeat offenders, which is also, you know, just a list on itself on the bad date sheet that tells you repeat offenders, you know, this person has done this 3 or 4 times, be aware. You know, and that's very helpful because, you know, just for example, won't, you know, put anyone out there. You know, there was one repeat offender that was, you know, out there. But because he was on the bad day sheet so much and we literally got a description of him, you know, so as soon as we saw him, we're like, no, you know, you know, like the description was so good where we knew that it was that person, you know, to the point where that person didn't come around no more because they knew, wait a minute. You know, something's going on that, you know, somebody's saying something because, you know, how did they know to stay away from me, I guess, or whatever they thought. But, you know, they took off.
So we get this pretty vivid description that's like useful enough for people to identify. Is there any point in like bringing the police in on this?
I can speak to that.
Thank you.
Because we, out of the request of our participants, we have... like, and I want to add, like, the Kensington Strangler was on our bad date sheet before he escalated. And the reason this bad date sheet exists is because when people who aren't working as sex workers or aren't, you know, and I think it's also just, like, women of color and poor women, like, they can go make a police report. But not a lot of the women we work with. Like, the police will not take the report, will arrest them for making a false report. Like, there's a lot of barriers and, like, a lot of really fucked up reasons this thing exists. But there was this repeat offender. Like, he was on there multiple times. It was this guy in this, like, VW, I don't know, where this woman who we would see regularly had reached out to us, and then an SVU detective did as well, where they wanted to use the bad date sheet in a court proceeding. When we decided to share it with SVU, and we have continued to do so. And I know, hoping to sort of like build a bridge between our organizations, recognizing that we have like different feelings about breaking the law, but we think like bad guys are bad guys and want some justice.
Definitely.
They've used it to do their job. But I think, I don't know if you've noticed this out there, but one thing, a trend that I'm noticing is there's now 4 people on the sheet who are either police officers or posing as police officers.
Yes.
And I think that's another common way that violent people are like leveraging the laws against sex workers to harm them. And when I talk to the police, they just say it wasn't one of their guys and there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah. So. Lindsay, you mentioned earlier about like among violent clients and also violent cops. Ilsa, like, did you experience that from police?
Oh, yes, definitely. Most definitely. I experienced that more than I should have. Actually, you shouldn't experience it at all.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that there's more of it than people even realize and people know. And, you know, what's bad is, you know, that being the situation that I was in, you know, because I'm out there doing what I'm doing illegally, you know, when you try to reach out to law enforcement, you know, and try to give a complaint, you know, or try to do anything about that, you're literally criticized, you're being harassed, you're being assaulted now because you tried to ask for help. So it puts you in a bad situation, and the officers literally know that. So they use that, you know. So, I mean, I was in a real bad situation with an officer that, I mean, literally, you know, it was like twice a week he would come and I was forced to have sex with him and he would beat me up as he was doing it. And, you know, and it was like, you can do this the good way or the bad way because I can lock you up right now. You know, oh, your word against mine, so what are you going to do? And he literally said that as he was doing what he was saying, as he was doing what he was doing. You know what I mean? So you put it, it's catch 22. You're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So you don't know what to do. You know, you're definitely not going to go to a law enforcement and ask for help after a situation like that. You know, where you tried to ask for help and, you know, you literally got locked up over it, you know, false charges, whatever the case may be. you know, because it varies, you know, on what they can do to you. You know, they literally can do pretty much whatever they want, you know. It puts you in a situation where you can't do anything about it, plain and simple. You know, you want to, and you're too scared to, because the people that are trying, that are supposed to protect you, you know, and are supposed to be there for you, are literally the ones that are harassing you and giving you a hard time. So then where do you go?
So do you think that, like, decriminalization is a solution? Like, if it's not illegal, then they don't have that power play? Do you think that that would be helpful?
Definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, because if it's not illegal, then they can't use that against you. You know, because that's the one main reason that they gave for doing what they were doing. You know, well, if you don't do it, I'll just lock you up. You know, and that was the main, you don't want to get locked up, you know what I mean? The last thing you want to do is go on a trip to jail. So you did what you had to do, you know, but then they, again, I'll say, but then they, you know, the gentleman I'm talking about, I'm going to call him a gentleman now, but the word I want to use is not even close. But,
we're on the internet. Whatever you want to, you're on the internet. You can say any words you want.
Dickhead motherfucker that did this shit to me, right? Because he was a dickhead, you know, a little dick at that. But, right? Yeah, because I'm going to get there. I'm going to go there. You know, a little dick at that. You know, he would use that to his advantage. You know, like, not only, you know, oh, yeah, I can lock you up, you know, or whatever, but, oh, what's your word against mine? And then what he did was, you know, every time I would walk around, he'd turn around and say, oh, well, walk that way, bitch. You know, don't walk this way, you know, or I want you to run this way. Or it was just stupid, dumb shit, but they know that they can get away with it. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't matter because they know that it's illegal and we're going to run from the law because they already have their MO out here as being, you know, such badasses. You know, when, you know, take the badge off, motherfucker, and let's see how bad you are. You know, take that off and all that, and then let's see what you're about. You know, no, but, you know, they hide behind the badge is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they use it against everything.
So your experiences, like, out on the street, like, was it entirely negative? Were there clients that you liked?
Oh, my God, yes. Yeah? There was clients that I actually ended up living with and having relationships with. I mean, I ended up with one guy in a condominium, you know. Took me to Wilmington, Delaware, and I was living a beautiful life, but drugs kept pulling me over here. You know, he kept coming to get me, and I kept sneaking off, you know what I mean? And, I mean, this guy was to a point where he was literally bringing me down, you know, well, here's $400 and get what you need in drugs, and, you know, I'll bring you back just so I could be with him, and that still wasn't, like, I still needed to be down here, you know what I mean? You know, like, oh, no, you can't take me out, you know. And then I would use the excuse of, well, my kids are down here. So we would come down and he would bring my mom $400 or $500 a week. Well, that's for the kids to make sure to take care of. Still wasn't enough. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you meet real good guys, you know.
Yeah.
And I try to look at it as, you know, for every 10 assholes that I meet, you know, the one really makes up for it. You know, when I meet a real nice guy, you know, he makes up for the 10 assholes that I meet.
So for you, was it entirely based on drugs? Like, was that... Okay, so what was it about for you?
Well, in the beginning, I started, you know, because I lost my job and I have no money, you know. I had kids, you know, blousy.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, the drugs took over and basically you're out there, you know, just trying to get your next fix, so to speak.
So,
when you met the nice client and the good client, then the sex became good, you know, then it's not robotic. You know, because you can go into that robotic stage and that play role. Oh, God, baby, yes, it's so good. And you're not really feeling anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. And you're like, oh, my God, tell me how much you're feeling that. And, you know, in your head, you're like, where is it? But, oh, God, yes, baby, yes. You know? And I'm telling you how it is, you know. You become robotic. You become immune to all that. You don't feel anything, but your act, it's a play role.
Yeah.
You know, you win an Oscar. Everyone out there that's on the avenue should get an Oscar for what we do, honestly. You know, because we make it so real, baby, they're coming back. So we got to be good at what we do. You know, but then you get those good guys, you know, where you get, you know, where you start to get feelings for. And then, oh, my God, that makes up for, because, my God, I'm getting paid and I'm getting good sex. So it works.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
We should all enjoy our jobs.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I used to call it a double whammy. I'm like, wow, I got a double whammy with this one.
And that's so hard to talk about because I feel, especially to, like, get any sympathy as a sex worker, you, like, need to have some sort of, like, reason or excuse.
Yeah.
And then it's at some point it's like, you know, it's like any job where, like, there's circumstances and you go to work. And then, like, yeah, it's not always awful. Yeah, sometimes it's exactly. like,
and again, it yeah, wasn't I just had all sex for drugs. Money. It wasn't yeah. all about drugs. I remember being so hungry in the street that I can say this freely right now, you know, I mean, it chokes me up still. But I remember taking that trick and fucking them for $2.50 because I was so hungry. Do you know what I mean? And it had nothing to do with drugs or anything else. It was just because I was hungry. So, you know, people got it wrong. Mm-hmm. People got it so wrong when they literally down us and put us down over what we do. Stop and talk to us and figure out, you know, be in our shoes for a day. You know what I mean? And then come say something. Because mm-hmm. you won't. You ain't got shit to say after that, trust me. You know? Go around, put up what I have to put up with, you know, for just 24 hours. And then come back and say the things that you just said to me. Because I guarantee you, you won't. You'll eat your words.
Mm-hmm. So now you are on sort of like a different place, and like you get to go and talk to other people.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And then you get to have like from lived experience, you can talk to people and like.
And what's great about Project Safe with that is that, you know, the girls that I work with are down to earth. You know what I mean? Like, I work with a lot of different organizations, you know, where, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you're working, you know, in some hotshot job, you know, and yeah, they're trying to reach out to people, but they're not talking to them like one-on-one, like, you know, like, down to where they're at, is what I'm saying. And with the girls at Project Safe, you know, I think when I'm saying girls, like, hey, what's up? You know what I mean? Because they've been there, done that. You know, I'm not saying all of them. You know what I'm saying? But I'm saying they understand the situation, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And they don't down talk you. They don't, you know, act like they're better than. You know, they're just letting you know, listen, you know, you're in this situation. I can help. I can help you with this and that, that and this. And if I can't, you know, I'll try to figure out what I can help you with, you know, if I can't. You know, and they're saying it, you know, on their level, on my level is what I should say, on my level. You know, that means a lot, you know, to us out there. It means definitely a lot, you know, because if you're going to come out there, you know, with your high and mighty, you know what I mean? You got this perfect job and, you know, oh, yeah, we can give you condoms, you know, and you're talking all this perfect English to girls that aren't about that, you lost them the minute you open your mouth. You know, and the minute, you know, you stuff up your nose to them, it's gone. But probably just if you don't have that. You know, you got girls that, you know, are coming at you, you know, like, yeah, what's up? You know, like, you're like, yo, come here, come here, come here. Like, oh, my God, what's up? You know, like if you're girlfriends, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So to speak, kind of. So, you know, I love that. You know, of course I wanted to be a part of that.
And what is it like for you now to be on the educator side? And you get to go talk to girls.
It's different, but it's great. It's great. I mean, it hurts when I go out there and I walk around and I see the girls that I've been tricking with, you know what I mean? That I've had double dates with and stuff, and they're still out there. Or I hear about the ones that are dead, you know what I mean? So it hurts, you know? But also, it's great because it's such a good feeling when you got that same one of them same girls, you know, that say, yo, I got this girl, she's 15 years old, you know? Got thrown out, she's been out for 2 years, she's trying to get clean. You know what I mean? Or, you know, can you help with that? Or you know, yo, mommy, you know, I know you work with them, you got a couple condoms, you know? You know, when you got guys out there trying to sell you a condom for $3 or $4 because they know what you're doing. You know, so trying to get you for whatever they can. You know, but you see Project Save, like, oh my God, thank God, I'm getting condoms for free right now. Mm. You know what I mean? So it feels good, you know, to be on the other side and actually know that I can help somebody the way they've helped me.
So what's your life like now?
It's not great. I'm not going to say it's great, okay. You know, because I don't sugarcoat nothing.
Okay.
You know, I'm still in between homes, so I'm homeless is what I call it. You know what I mean? In between homes. You know what I mean? But yeah, I have a place to keep my head. I'm not in the street is what I'm saying. I'm not living in a band. I'm not none of that. But, you know, because of Project Safe, you know, and you know, other places that I'm involved with, it's a whole lot better. You know, it's actually given me a chance to live life the way I'm supposed to live, you know, and help someone along the way. It feels real good. You know, and the fact that my kids see that means the world to me. My grandbabies are like, wow, you know, like, grandma. I thought this was a radio station. Okay? I got everybody looking for the radio station. And then he texted me that it's online. So now I'm like, yo, guys, it's online. No. It's online. You know, and I got everybody's mother, you know, because like, yo, mom or grandma, you know, Titi or whatever. It feels good, you know, to be acknowledged as that and not being looked for because you've been gone for 2 days and they think that you're overdosed in an abandoned somewhere. They know where I'm at today. You know, like, don't worry about mom. She's going to do that damn talk show about the sex thing. I was like, oh, it's online today. I told her, this is where you go, right? And she said, sex with what? Yeah, girl's gonna get really mad at me. And she said, okay. You know, but it felt good. It feels real good like that. You know, like I said, I'm not perfect. You know what I mean? I make mistakes along the way, just like everybody else.
Like everybody.
But at least I'm getting a chance at doing something better.
What do you have in your hope for, like, going forward? Like, what would you like looking forward, like, 3 years, 5 years? What are you hoping, given that your trajectory so far, like, has gone in an upward way?
What am I hoping?
Yeah, what are you hoping?
Like, for me personally, I'm hoping to be completely stable. You know, like, when I mean stable, I mean in a house where, you know, I don't have to worry about where I'm going to lay my head at the next day. You know, I'm definitely hoping that, you know, because I'm not going nowhere when it comes to Project Safe. You know what I mean? They've helped me, and I'm definitely not going nowhere. And I'm hoping that I literally get, you know, to the point where, you know what I mean, we're up there, you know what I mean? And I can say, damn, I'm a part of that. You know, I'm definitely hoping for that, and I'm hoping, you know, that in three or four years from now, you know, I'm not looked at, you know, as that, you know, damn, there's that drug addict trick bitch. You know what I mean? It's going to be like, yeah, there's that trick that used to be that trick, but look what she's doing now. That's what I'm hoping, just that, just a little bit of tranquility. That's all, you know, just be a little bit respected. That's all I'm looking for. Just because of what I do and who I'm with and what I've done, I bleed red at the end of the day, just like you, if you cut me. My blood comes out red, just like yours.
So you went, like, you went out onto the streets because, like, you had a job that you lost.
Yeah, and then, yeah, you know, with the drug addiction, with the kids, with everything. Everything was involved. Everything took a play in it.
What kind of work do you want to do?
I've always been in, okay, let me backtrack. I was a straight A honor student. See, a lot of people don't know that. A lot of girls in the street are very intelligent. Mm-hmm. You know, straight A honor student, been to Worcester Skill Center Police Security. You know, I did the, you know, Euclid Ambulance Corporation for EMT. I did the Gordon Phillips for hairstyling. I'm not stupid in any kind of way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I made stupid choices. You know, but I'm not stupid in any kind of way. And what I really love, you know, is the medical field. You know, I want to take the EMT and further it, you know, with paramedics. I would love to do that. You know, right now I don't have the funds to do that. You know, and because of, you know, whatever I did in the past or whatever, you know, I got that loan that I can't pay for right now. You know, but once that's cleared, I'm on my way back to school because I love school. I love to learn. You know, so definitely that way, yeah, that's the kind of field I want to be. You know, anything that has to do with helping somebody, it's just me. It's just the way I've always been. And as long as it's exciting and I can help somebody, I'm there.
That sounds like a great job for you then. Yeah.
Yeah, because I don't like being bored. I can't stay still. You know, that's just my MO. You know, I got OCD like you wouldn't believe. So, yeah, as long as, you know, I can be moving and helping somebody, I'm good. That's what I want to be.
So on the Project Safe piece, like, clearly this is not like a government organization. This is clearly like just people who feel passionately about this. Where do you get, like, the condoms, the funding, like, where is any of this coming from?
I will give that to them.
I
take a cookie.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and Ilsa's giving us way too much credit. She's definitely, like, doing a lot of the heavy lifting for us. Yeah, like, what I'll do with a few other folks is we have one grant that really keeps us running from AIDS United. Thank you, AIDS United. That is Syringe Access Fund that helps pay for the safer injection supplies, which is a huge part of what we do. Again, not because all, like, women in the street are using drugs, but we get it. We help insert the people who are using drugs, we give them supplies, and we prioritize women because traditional syringe exchanges usually reach men, but not women, and then they're often resold and, like, leveraged against women. Definitely. So it's a very powerful thing to be able to give that directly to women, no cost to them. And then we hustle up everything here and there where we get condoms from the city, lube when they have it, but we have a lot of really wonderful donors. Just, like, random people who give us money, clients who throw us a few dollars here and there. You know, Crust Punks raise a lot of money for us with punk shows.
Crust Punks,
like, are a huge part of our budget, or our revenue, I should say. So it's amazing. And even doing outreach, like, people give me a few bucks on the street, like, it really does come from the community, which is great because that is unrestricted funding, and we can be nimble in how we spend it. And, you know, people need overdose kits, we'll pay for that. People need dental dams, we can pay for that.
Mm-hmm. What's in an overdose kit?
I'll let Ilse talk about that because she is like the guardian angel of Kensington.
Our overdose kit basically consists of a pair of gloves, your Narcan, which is naloxone, you know, which is the medication used to reverse an overdose, which syringes that you need, your alcohol pads, your little wipes to clean your hands, also, you know, like the little mouthpiece that you need just in case you have to do CPR.
Oh, okay.
That's what it consists of, you know, so that someone in the street, you know, if they're witnessing, they're with somebody and they're getting high and that person OD'd, you know, at least they have that overdose kit where they can, you know, they can give that person a chance, you know, to live, you know, not just leave them, they're dead.
So, like, after you use this, like, then what? Like, do you need to call 911? Like,
it's a whole process, you know. You know, of course, you know, you do it, you wait a certain amount of minutes, you know. If not, you can inject again, you know. It, you know, of course, you're told, you know, it's preferred to call 911, you know, of course, in any situation. But I'm going to stress, the situations that are out in the street, you're not going to get that.
Yeah.
You know, and just because you can't get that doesn't mean you can't save a life. That's what I'm trying to, you know, get people to understand, you know. Just because I don't want to call 911 doesn't mean that I don't deserve a chance at breathing if I happen to OD. You know what I mean? So, you know, I reach those people, you know, listen, you know, you don't want to call 911, that's your choice. You know what I mean? But please, let me educate you on how to use this so that if your buddy or, God forbid, you go out, you know what to do. You know?
Yeah, I mean, because clearly, as you've already mentioned, like, you can't necessarily rely on those systems that are, like, supposed to be there to help, like, people in need.
Yeah, like, it takes
that's
the ambulance.
Literally what they're for.
The ambulance won't even show up in some neighborhoods.
Oh, my God, I had this one guy OD, and it was so sad. He overdosed. It was third in Indiana. And yeah, I was back there doing what I wasn't supposed to be doing, you know what I mean? But he happened to have an overdose, and I hear somebody screaming. I'm like, oh, God, what happened? You know, and I go back there, and he's on the floor, and he's gone, you know? And at that time, I didn't know. Well, first of all, they have the overdose kits back then. So I come, and nobody wants to call the cops at this point, you know what I mean? So I run out, and I'm screaming, give me a phone, give me a phone, give me a phone. Somebody finally gives me a phone. I call. 10 minutes pass, nothing. At this point, I call my daughter. I'm like, Val, like, somebody's OD, I don't know what to do. She's like, why? You know, run. My daughter's 8 months pregnant at this time, you know? She's running back there, you know? She's like, I don't give a fuck, you know? Ambulance shows up, right? Perfect example, ambulance shows up. And they're actually, I stand up like when I get emotional. and it's two, you know, two paramedics. And they're like, well, you think we should go back there? And my daughter, which, yeah, she's very strongly opinionated, you know? And, the fuck do you mean? Should you go out there? Why are you even fucking, like, you know, thinking about it? Like, your ass should have been there a long time ago. You know what I mean? So point being,
job.
By the time they decided to go back
job.
There,
yeah.
By the time they decided to go back there, you know, dude apparently already came to. Somebody had given him something. Came to, and somebody had told him, this is the story I got, somebody had told him they called the cops and he took off like a bat out of hell.
Oh, God.
So that's the example that you know, that I'm giving, you know, just because they don't want to, you know, get involved with the police doesn't mean they shouldn't be given a chance to, you know, live if something happens to them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like there's probably a lot of people who are listening to this and feeling like very strongly wanting to help. What can people do to help? Like, what can we do to support Project Safe? What can we do, like, as individual
people? Donations major help, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Because the more you donate, the more supplies we can get, the more information we can get, the more we can reach out to more people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, besides that, volunteers, you know, we gladly take on anybody who's willing to volunteer, you know, and go out there and do what I do, you know. I go out there and I get down there, you know, in the dirty. I go in under the tracks, you know what I mean? And be like, hey, you know, I got some condoms, I got this, I got that, you know, and you need that more and more now. Just anything and everything they're willing to help in when it comes to the safety of women first, you know. I'm sorry to say
we are sexist.
Yeah, women first, you know what I mean? You know, and of course the men, you know, blasey blasey, but That's just the main two things that I can think of right now, you know, donations and volunteers.
Mm-hmm. So how do we get involved? Where do we find out more about Project Safe? Where do we send money?
So Lindsay knows.
Yeah. Folks can check out our website. It's www.projectsafephilly.org. And we're also on Facebook, Project Safe, or it's at Safe Phila on Facebook and Twitter, where we'll have occasional action alerts around different legislation. We'll announce different volunteer trainings. You can sign up for our mailing list. But I also want to add, just like, really, there's so many, again, it really is like, it feels like a mythology around like who the good guys are, who the bad guys are. And people who are hustling in a variety of different ways or trading sex are always like the butt of the joke, always like thought of last, always thought of in these horrible ways. And just in your everyday talk, just, you know, stand up for women. Yeah, Zil said we're all the same. So like, yeah, I don't know, just the little things.
Like, it seems to me like, of all the issues that like could be unifying, right? Like, so no matter who you are, whether you identify as like a religious person or you consider yourself like a sex positive, like progressive, like political type, like this is a pretty unifying thing. Like, everybody should be able to get down with this. Like, absolutely everybody, right? Like, I mean, if you're like a sex positive, like progressive liberal type, like you should absolutely see how this is folks who are suffering because of systems that they did not create. And it's like by just like letting people just like fend for themselves.
Pretty much.
You know, like we're failing each other. And then if you identify in some sort of like religious spectrum or, you know, like spiritual belief, like this is literally in all of the books. Yeah. All of the books say... You see your neighbor, like, needs a hand. Like, literally, this is in all the books. This is your responsibility as a human. And so this is such a, like, I just don't even understand how anybody could, like, hear the stuff we've been talking about today and not feel like, well, shit. Like, this is what I gotta go do right now. So I very much hope everybody who is listening to this, like, hears this information and, like, really takes it seriously and, like, does, you know, everybody has, like, different stuff that they can give. Not everybody has the money, not everybody has the time, but like whatever it is that you do have, like I hope people feel really, really inspired.
I hope so too, because like I said, every little bit helps. Even if it's just that person just heard this, and literally the next damn trick that you walk around, you know, that you see in the street, the next prostitute that you come across in the street, it ain't gonna kill you to say hi. Your dick ain't gonna fall off. Your pussy ain't gonna rot. You know what I mean? Like, just say hi. Me, nothing's gonna happen to you, you know what I mean? But a high back, and if we're having a bad, bad day, we'll be like, and just keep on walking. It ain't gonna kill nobody, you know. Treat us like human beings, because that's what we are.
Oh, Jesus, yeah. Oh,
man. I'm sorry,
this is such a good point.
I said that in the street when I said hi, and somebody don't respond. I'm like, yo, you think I'm gonna fall off? I ain't gonna hurt you.
Yeah, I mean, see, like living on the East Coast, I've gotten like really sad about how I don't talk to strangers anymore, like on the street, because like where I grew up, like you say hi to people and that was normal, and then it got sort of like trained out of me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That like that's sad. A scary thing, that all strangers are scary, like
but it is what it is, you know, because the crime has gone up, this has gone up, that's gone up, but it still doesn't hurt just to say hi. It makes a difference. It makes a difference in a person's life, trust me on that. It makes a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, a smile, you know, just a hi. Even if it's how's your day going, it's fucked up. Okay, you know, well, mine's going good. I'm sorry yours fucked up. You know, keep walking. Yeah. Just something, you know, just acknowledge that I exist. That's all.
And I think that that is a
regardless of what I do.
Yeah, I think that is a really like perfect note to like end this conversation, because that is such like a really powerful, meaningful way to like really crystallize everything we've been talking about. So I want to super, super thank Ilsa and Lindsay for coming on today. This has been a fantastic conversation. I am so honored that you both made time and shared your stories. Like, this is, I've been doing this for a long time, and this is one of my favorite episodes. Really, I'm really, I'm really grateful.
I mean, yeah. I just hope I reached somebody and made a difference, and actually, you know, they turn around and actually the next trick you see, say hi.
Yes. Yeah. I want to thank you so much for making time for us. So thank you to Ilsa and Lindsay from Project Safe. Everybody, I hope that you're listening and feel inspired to make some kind of change to do something to help. So thank you both so much. And it's my shit right now. And I want to thank everybody for listening. So grateful for you. And have a fantastic day. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.